If you are uncomfortable, anxious, and uncertain, you are winning the game. Ken Goodman. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Emetophobia Help. I'm Anna Christie from Vancouver, Canada, recovered emetophobic licensed psychotherapist specializing in emetophobia and your host for this podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to have as my guest Ken Goodman, LCSW, who specializes in the treatment of anxiety disorders and OCD. Ken is on the board of directors for the Anxiety and Depression Association of America and founding director of QuietMindSolutions.com. He has authored and produced the Anxiety Solution series, Your Guide to Overcoming Panic, Worry, Compulsions, and Fear, a 12-hour self-help audio program, and Break Free from Anxiety, a coloring self-help book. His latest book, The Emetophobia Manual, is the first and only self-help book for those who suffer with the fear of vomiting. Ken has also produced several relaxation exercises, guided meditations, and hypnosis sessions. He lectures at universities and organizations across the country. In his practice in Los Angeles, he does individual and group therapy to help anxiety sufferers free themselves from debilitating fear. Ken's website is kengoodmantherapy.com. Welcome, Ken.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, nice to see you. I know our listeners cannot see you, but Ken and I can see each other, which is really nice. I'm really excited to have you on this podcast today to talk about your book that just came out, The Emetophobia Manual, Free Yourself from the Fear of Vomit and Reclaim Your Life.
Yes, that took about three years of my life. To write it, but it turned out very well.
Right. Yes. It's a really. I have read it through. I ordered it as soon as I found out it was on Amazon, and then I read the whole thing. So, really exciting. But let's start with, you know, how did you get into treating emetophobia in the first place, and how long have you been doing that?
So I've been treating anxiety disorders exclusively for at least the last 15 years, all forms of anxiety. So whether it's panic disorder or phobias, whether it's a fear of public speaking or driving or OCD, all types of OCD, generalized anxiety disorder. And I began to work with people with emetophobia just because I was known in the Los Angeles area treating anxiety disorders. There's not that many of us who just treat anxiety. And so I started treating people with emetophobia. And I'm on the board of directors for the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. And so I did a presentation at their annual conference on emetophobia, and then just got increasingly more interested in the topic. And then realized that there are no books on emetophobia except people's personal journeys. And so I decided that was a void and that I wanted to fill. And I just finished writing a book called Break Free from Anxiety, which was a coloring self-help book on all forms of anxiety. Mm-hmm. So I like to be creative in my writings. And so I decided that I wanted to be creative with this book as well. So I started that journey and I just increasingly got more and more interested in the topic, and more people began to call me.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right that there's a void in books, at least by qualified people.
I neglected to mention that I did a webinar for the Anxiety Depression Association of America on emetophobia, and it got a huge response, just a massive response. And I think it was that time, that's when I really started to decide to fill the void, because I saw that there was a huge need and no resources.
That's right. Yeah. And as many of our listeners know, Dr. David Russ in North Carolina and I have been taking up the last 2 years anyway of our lives. We're writing a book which will be for therapists.
That's great.
On how to treat emetophobia, because there's definitely a void there as well. But it's an exciting time, I think, for emetophobia. It is still under-researched. There are maybe between 30 and 50 research studies that have been done, which is like nothing. You know, if you look at OCD, for example, or GAD or any of those, you'll find hundreds and hundreds of studies that have been done. So it is under-researched. And so it's an exciting time because there are more websites that for information. You know, people Google emetophobia, you can actually find information now where 10 years ago when I was starting my website, there was really nothing.
You're a pioneer.
Well, yes, that's true, probably a pioneer. Now, if you just look up the keyword emetophobia, my website is down at about, number 14 on the second or third page now. But if you look up emetophobia help or emetophobia treatment, it'll still come up as number one. So I don't know.
There
people
you
are
go.
Still finding
you are still number one.
And like to, as long as people find the information,
that's right.
What
that's
I care
right.
about for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, the book, can you maybe just kind of walk us through a little bit what your theory and kind of treatment method, which people will find in the book if they're buying the book and reading it. Could you walk us through that
sure,
a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I base my treatment on all types of anxiety based on cognitive behavioral therapy, acceptance commitment therapy, and exposure therapy. And I combine these treatment modalities into my unique approach. And voila, we've come up with a treatment for emetophobia, which is, to be honest with you, very similar to my treatment of all anxiety disorders. I just tailor it to the fear of throwing up and people and just the fear of vomit. And so in the book, I use a lot of metaphors. I use these QR codes, which link to pictures and videos. The videos and pictures are not only exposures where people will see things that are going to be difficult, but also videos and pictures that are inspirational, that will help motivate people to rise up and take those gritty steps to get better. The treatment approach that I use is sort of my own unique approach, where I have people look at the problem less of an inner struggle, but more of a game against a very tricky opponent. That a tricky
right.
opponent being anxiety, and how you basically win this game by a certain type of mentality, an offensive mentality. If anyone is, I like working with athletes, but not necessarily only athletes, because athletes understand that you have to have a certain type of mindset, a sort of bring it on mindset, put on your game face. And when the reason why people with anxiety have a hard time is they're always playing defense, and it's hard to be successful if you're only playing defense. And so I really go into mm-hmm. this approach in the book in great detail with I think a lot of humor and interesting anecdotes and such.
Yes, I'll vouch for your humor. I don't do that with everyone, but yes, it's it's a delightful and easy read, very accessible, very easy to read. I just wanted to back up for one moment. You talk about QR codes, and I'm not sure everyone knows exactly what that is, but they're like those little scan codes that you see on everything in the stores, you know, and you just hold your iPhone or your smartphone up to it, and it will give you a link on your phone, and then you can open up the picture or the video. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant, because I think a lot of emetophobic people, if they get a book and, you know, they flip through, you just kind of flip through the way that you do from back to front, and there are a bunch of scary pictures, that they're less likely to engage with the book. But there are no scary pictures in the book, which is really
right.
Cool.
And then anytime you go to a QR code, it says exactly what you're going to see. So in some
right.
of the earlier
yeah.
exposures, it says something like, you do not see vomit in this. Maybe you just see someone holding their stomach. So you actually...
Right.
You read yeah. what you're about to see, so there's not too many surprises, really.
Yeah.
And then there's other things in there, like links to, you know, as people move up the hierarchy, there's links to movies where people are throwing up, and there's cartoons of people throwing up. But we always start off
right.
with things that are much easier, like just pictures.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes, I can't remember exactly, I looked at a lot of your QR codes, you know, looked through them, but I didn't look at them all. Maybe I did. I don't know. I can't remember. But I know they start off really easy. Just like the resources on my website start out with words and then pictures and so, or drawings, I should say, like cartoons and things like that, and funny things that are mm-hmm. maybe about vomit, but they are not scary looking, and you do the same.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to ask you about words. You kind of have you have this point of view in your writing that people need to get used to seeing the word vomit and every other word that has anything to do with vomit. And so you do use a lot of the words all the way through at least the first part.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about your reasoning for that?
Yeah, you know, most of the people that I have worked, well, I can't say most. Actually, I'm not even going to give a number. There are a certain amount of people that I work with who have a really hard time with those words, and other people don't. They can say the words, and it's not a big deal. But some people have a really, really hard time, and, you know, just seeing the word triggers them, and it's very difficult. And so it's hard to write a book without using these words. And so even in the first chapter, the very end, you know, I talk about how, all right, well, how do you get acclimated to a cold swimming pool? Well, you just jump in and move around. So we're just going to jump into the material, and you're going to say that you're going to see these words a lot. And by the end of the book, you know, these words are not going to bother you. But you have to sort of
right.
push through it. It might be challenging for people, but this is a challenging process, and you have to push through it and be able to hear these words and say these words. And I guess if you really have a hard time, you can sort of read past them very quickly.
Yeah. I don't know that I'd recommend that either, but if you're worried about, because there are people, I belong to a lot of Facebook groups that are for emetophobic people, and we have to put trigger warnings up constantly. People don't write the words out. They just write the first letter, and then they put an asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't used to have Facebook groups. We had emetophobia.org website, which was a discussion forum, and I still moderate that forum along with another fellow, and it's a little easier there, because we can kind of say on this forum we're going to write all the words out, so you know, just get used to, you don't have to type them out if you don't want to, but we do. So anyway, other people's Facebook groups, though,
I just,
you have to be careful.
Yeah, absolutely. I just met with a patient yesterday. I work with a lot of people who have health anxiety, worries about illnesses like cancer and ALS. And just
right,
for some people, they just say the C word. They don't say the word cancer.
Oh,
but I'm just trying
cancer,
to teach people
yeah.
that words only have as much power as you give them. And people with illness anxiety give those words too much power. But it's hard. It's very difficult. It's difficult to just sometimes just say the words because they're so triggering.
Yeah. One of the things I've noticed just on television and movies and things lately is that more and more people are not saying the word died. You know, they're not, even I was just watching the George Floyd, the fella's trial, that's the police officer, forgive me for not knowing his name, but, and even the doctor testifying and the lawyer asking questions are saying he was passed away. And, you know, and I think, wow, so passed away is like the new died. And I find that kind of sad, actually, because I think we don't, like, we need to talk more about dying, not less, you know, since we're all going to do it one day. But anyway,
I mean, you can't control what comes out of people's mouths or what you see on Facebook or the written word. You really need to focus on your response to those things and how you're going to respond. And so I really try to focus on that in the book. Is the response to things that you can't control is where you need to put your energy.
Right. Well, if anyone feels that they're not yet ready to purchase Ken's book with all the words in it, I'll tell you what, first of all, you should purchase the book. Secondly, you can go to my website and you can go to level one of exposure. And that's the word vomit is written right there. And other words as well. And I tell people to print them out or write them on, you know, a piece of regular copy paper, one word per piece of paper, and stick them up around your house. And every time you walk by, to say the words out loud and to, you know, really think about them. So that's what I do with people.
You know, another good thing you might do is if you have a hard time saying these words, is get a tennis ball or any ball and just throw it up in the air, just to yourself. And then as you throw it up, say the word. So it gives you something. It's a distraction because now you have to catch the ball. So if you throw it up and you say a word and you throw it up again and say a different euphemism for vomit, like barf or whatever, and just kind of keep throwing them up, saying these different words as you're playing catch with yourself. It sort of takes away that power because now you're focusing on catching the ball. The other thing you could do is record yourself saying these words slowly. Say the word, wait 5 seconds, 10 seconds, say the word, say a different word. And you sort of maybe like a 5-minute recording of all these different kinds of words that have to do with throwing up. And then listen to the recording as you're washing dishes. Or listen to the recording as you're doing something around the house, you know, so you're getting used to hearing it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I love the tennis ball thing. Well, both of those ideas are really great. Those are great ideas, and I will be stealing them with my clients. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. But, in fact, with one of my patients, she had a hard time even saying the word. So I made the recording myself. I would say a word.
Okay.
And then wait 10 seconds and then she would hear it and then have to throw the ball up and repeat it. So, yeah,
that's really great. I think, you know, I mean, the point is buy the book, get used to the words. That's the easiest thing of everything you're going to do. It is the absolute easiest thing. It may trigger you a little bit. You might get a little bit of a jolt of electricity, but very, very quickly, you're not going to anymore. Because you're just going to be used to seeing them. And the other thing that you have in the book are stories, stories of people getting sick. I particularly enjoyed your stories of yourself on airplanes. I'm joking when I say I particularly enjoyed it. I'm sorry that you get sick on airplanes, but you know, that's everybody that I treat. It seems to be their worst nightmare, but yet here you sit perfectly fine and calm and happy. And, you know,
well, you know, I have a big whole deal. Chapter towards the end on my personal vomit stories. And because I get motion sickness, I've had, you know, quite a few over the years, and, you know, they're never great going through it, but they're always pretty humorous for me afterwards. And in fact, well, I won't give it away. You can read the book.
Yeah. Read the book. So otherwise we'll have to put the trigger warning on the podcast exactly. People aren't going to listen to the podcast. So that's okay. Yeah. Read the book. It also won't hurt you to read those stories of things that are happening to other people, because you're reading them all the time. People are reading them all the time on Facebook, on Instagram, you know, all the time, and they're freaked out all the time, you know, they're anxious mm-hmm. all the time. So better to mm-hmm. channel it into a program for yourself that you're trying to get better and to get over the phobia.
Glad you used that word, program. So those are a couple of, because I feel like the book is sort of like a program where it's really lays it out step mm-hmm. by step. The exposures are there, you decide the order of those exposures, but it, you know, the first quarter of the book is really laying out the foundation of what you need to know before you get even into any of this exposure work. So that's the way I wanted to do it, like the program.
Yeah. Well, it's really great. I when you were talking about your kind of theory on how to treat emetophobia, you said it's less of an inner struggle, more of a game against an opponent. I particularly loved in your book the metaphor of a bus trip, mm-hmm. and you're the driver of the bus, right? Mm-hmm. And in the back of the bus is some jerk named anxiety or whatever mm-hmm. your monster emetophobia is, and that, you know, if you keep stopping the bus and going back to deal with that monster sitting in the back, you're never going to get where you're going. Mm-hmm. And you kind of draw that out. And at least when I was reading the book, I remembered that all the way to the end of the book, mm-hmm. you know, because you kind of, for everything that you suggest and every step along the way, I still kept remembering, yeah, okay, you're on a trip. And,
I think metaphors is a great way to teach people, and so they carry that metaphor throughout the entire book in a larger framework. And then within the book, there's many, many smaller, you know, metaphors mm-hmm. that sort of help people understand, really drive home the points I'm trying to make, you know.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, they're great. I learned the power of metaphor with people with anxiety in studying ACT, acceptance and mm-hmm. commitment therapy, because I think the founders of Hayes, is it? I think that's his name. Stephen Hayes? Uses a lot of Stephen Hayes, a lot of, I just knew a preacher named Stephen Hayes, so I always think that's not mm-hmm. who it is, mm-hmm. but it's a common name anyway. But he uses a lot of metaphor as well. And my favorite one of his that I share with my clients a lot is there's the jerk that comes to your party.
Yes.
That you didn't invite, you know, and you open the door and there he is, he's come in, and you can ruin your party, which is your whole life, by just trying to watch the jerk and talk to the jerk and get rid of the jerk. And, or you can just, you know, enjoy your party, and the jerk's going to leave after, you know, when everyone else leaves, he'll leave. He's right, not there forever.
Yes.
I do like that one and use that one a lot, but
yeah, that's a good metaphor.
I wanted to ask you whether, because I used to treat other anxiety disorders as well. Many years ago, I only treat emetophobia now. So for the last 10 years, but how would you say, if at all, that emetophobia differs from other anxiety disorders in kind of the way that you approach treatment, or does it?
Well, I think it's, out of all the phobias, I think it's one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult, because you never know when something's going to come up. If you have a fear of flying, you know when you're flying. You know, if you have a fear of public speaking, you know when your speech is going to be. With emetophobia, you just never know, like, when it's going to happen. you know, and is this person going to get me sick? Is this food, is this a food have food poisoning? You just never know. And so even though it rarely ever happens for people, it could happen today. And I think when people have anxiety about emetophobia, they worry like today's the day. Like, could this be the day? And then right. In addition to that, one of the physical symptoms of anxiety that people experience is nausea. It's a very common symptom.
Yes.
Or stomach distress. Mm-hmm. And anytime someone with emetophobia gets that stomach distress or nausea, they think they're going to throw up. Even though they look back in their life and they can probably identify zero times they've thrown up because of anxiety, it still fools them every time. I have other patients who have physical symptoms. They have a fear of, they get lightheaded. So what do they fear? They feel fear passing out. So that's why I think emetophobia is challenging for those two reasons.
Right. Yes. I think that it is as well. And I also believe that it was difficult, at least for me, when I was, because I used to have emetophobia, and when I was going through treatment, there was no internet, there was no YouTube, mm-hmm. there were no Google images, there were no books that had pictures of people vomiting in them. And so it was difficult to structure a hierarchy, and it still is. And I think that if there are therapists out there who haven't found my resources on my website or haven't bought your book or read anything about it, they try to create hierarchies that, like, some of my clients have emailed me hierarchies that other therapists and they made together, and they just didn't seem all that realistic. You know, like they all seem to be like a list of five or six things that I would put at the almost at the very top of the hierarchy. And they don't realize that there are things that will trigger you a little bit, like words, like cartoons, like, you know, that you could start with and not start with just, you know, videos of someone vomiting, for example. Like, I often see that as a very first step on some people's hierarchy. And I think, wow,
that's way too high.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, you really have to, and you can break up exposures pretty easily, you know? So if someone has a fear of just looking at it, you know, you just have to look at a still picture of just, like, in my book, there's just a picture of someone holding her stomach. So she's not throwing up, she's just holding her stomach.
Yes.
So sometimes you just have to start there, you know, or if you have a fear, I have a patient with a fear of driving after she eats. So she'll wait 6 hours before she drives. So we talk about the first step might be eating, like just taking one bite of something. I said, take one bite of a carrot and then, like, drive down the block. Well, that was too much for her. So what we had to start with was lick a carrot and then just sit in your car.
Okay.
Just lick your carrot and sit in
your car. Yeah, exactly. And there's a group of I don't know the name. Okay, I'm prattling on now, but it's called Rogers in the United States. You're probably familiar.
Oh,
anxiety.
Rogers Behavioral Health.
They have. Thank you. Yes, and they do some really good work.
Actually.
Yeah, they've done, you know, their eating disorder program. They have, at least I've talked to them in Wisconsin and in Michigan, and they have adapted it to people with emetophobia because they understand that while they have disordered eating, it's not an eating disorder in the same sense. But there was a girl that I had as a client, and she was there. And she was terrified of taking Tylenol or any pill because when she was a little kid, her mom gave her Tylenol for a fever and she threw it up. So she had this fear of Tylenol, which extended to all pills. So they were trying to get her to take a vitamin and then a gummy vitamin. Mm. And they got me on the phone and I said, well, cut the vitamin in half or cut it in four. You know, and they're like, oh, yeah, like, what a great idea. And what's amazing is she wasn't even sure she could eat a quarter of it. So they ended up cutting this gummy vitamin in eight. Mm-hmm. And she took 1/8, but the next day she took the whole thing. And the day after that, she took a Tylenol pill.
Very good.
You know, it just, yeah. And you just have to start for her, it just clicked for her.
Yeah, I just have to start with the smallest, littlest thing possible, you know.
Exactly.
And it's hard too, because oftentimes people with anxiety disorders or emetophobia, they really need to be on medicine, like an antidepressant, because their weight is so low and they're so anxious, but they're so afraid of the side effects of throwing up. But I've never encountered a person in my entire life who've taken an antidepressant and thrown up. They can get nauseous.
No, me neither.
They can get nauseous, but I think the nausea is more because they're anxious as opposed to the side effect.
Yes, especially if they're a emetophobic person.
Yes.
Yeah. And I've also had people that that I've known that have taken SSRIs that are not emetophobic, and I've been kind of grilling them, like, what does it feel like? And they say more that you feel funny. You just feel funny, you know, just weird. It's not really nauseous. It's not really lightheaded. But if you were emetophobic, you might interpret it that way. But it's really just feeling a bit funny or weird. But yeah, that can be it. Antidepressants can really help people that are 24/7 really scared. So,
sleep is poor and you're not eating and you're very thin, I think it's really critical that you take that brave step and take the smallest dose possible.
I wanted to ask you, you said that you treat people with OCD or obsessive compulsive disorder. You're probably familiar with Dr. David Veal, who is primary researcher on emetophobia in England, psychiatrist. And one of his last studies that he came out with, he concluded in the study that he was led to believe that emetophobia might be a subset of OCD, much like contamination or, you know, all the different kind of subsets of OCD. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I think there's a whole spectrum of fear of, you know, emetophobia, from people have more mild cases to more severe. And it's really clear to me when people have OCD. Of course, if you have a severe case of emetophobia, you're obsessed with the idea of vomiting, and you have extensive rituals about how to do things and only the foods that you can eat. And oftentimes your obsessions and compulsions are about eating and what you can and can't do. But then there's a whole subset of people with OCD where the obsessions and the compulsions are really not related so much to, the eating. Like, for instance, I had a patient I'm working with, and he would start to just hold in his saliva because he was suddenly afraid that maybe if he swallowed it, it would be sort of poisonous, and then it would make him throw up. So he would have to hold in his mouth and then go to the sink and eventually spit it out. Sometimes it could be really, so that was even somewhat related to it. But then there's other people have more of a, like, okay, if I have to flip the light switch three times, the light switch three times, then I won't throw up today. And it has nothing to do.
Exactly.
So it can be. You can have both OCD and emetophobia, but severe cases are, there's a lot of rituals between what you can and can't do. Checking expiration dates, or, you know, compulsively going online and looking for how long it would take to digest, you know, this kind of food versus this kind of food. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought about it a bit myself. I had a more typical OCD when I was a child, because I remember being 5 years old, between 5 and 7, based on the house I was in. And I told my dad, "Dad, when I go to walk through the dining room and the kitchen, I have to step on only these certain tiles. And I said, and if any of my fingers touches the table, a top of a table, I have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 with my fingers, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And my dad, okay, so if I was five, it was 1963, okay? Mm-hmm. So my dad said, oh, well, that's called a habit. It's actually not, it's called OCD, but whatever. Right, right. He said, and the only way to get out of a habit is you just stop doing it. And I did. Mm-hmm. Like, and when you think about, when I think back on that, I think, yeah, that actually is the treatment for it. You know, stop doing that and you'll still be okay. But it's just kind of a funny story. But I find that a lot of my clients have OCD symptoms for sure. But the good thing is that the treatment is the same, isn't it? I mean, gradual exposure, response or ritual prevention, which they shortened to ERP, is the same treatment for both.
Right.
Now, you don't suggest anywhere in your book that people have to vomit in order to get over emetophobia. Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, in fact, I recommend not doing it because I don't think it's wise. I think drinking Ipecac or sticking your finger down your throat, I don't think it's necessary to, I mean, I've treated enough patients who've overcome it without having them do that for them to know that people can get better without, I mean, you know, people have all sorts of fears that they can't, I mean, if you have a fear of cancer, you're not going to get cancer. If you have a fear of death, you're not going to die.
Right.
If you have a fear of a plane crash, you're not going to, so you can go, you can overcome fear without actually doing what you're the most afraid of. You just have to do all the other exposures.
Right. And I appreciate that. A number of, you know, there are some therapists who think that you do have to vomit to get over it. But that's not necessarily true, because I've had my clients who have tried it and still didn't get over it. You know, they've drank the Ipecac or whatever. They don't even sell that in Canada anymore. I don't know if they sell it anymore in the States, but
also
people were doing,
you know,
too many pranks.
Right. But, you know, just because you face a fear doesn't mean you're going to get over it. I mean, I've had people with a fear of driving, and just because they drive a lot doesn't mean they're going to overcome it. Because if you're in a highly anxious state when you do the exposure, that's going to backfire. that exposure, you know. So if you drink Ipecac and then you have a panic attack, well, you know, now you could even be more afraid of throwing up, because now you're combining the panic attack with the throwing up, and it's a disaster. So,
I mean, if you're scared to death while you're doing an exposure of any kind, and then you're finished the exposure, you go home, it's going to feel a hell of a lot better to be home. You'll be like, this is great. Like, not doing an exposure feels way better than doing an exposure. And there are parts of your brain that don't, that like, they record that in a way that you don't want them to, you know, like they will remember that it's better. It feels better to be home doing nothing than it does to be out trying to eat or whatever. So you do have to do the exposure until you aren't anxious when you're doing it.
But don't you think you have to do the exposure? Like, there's a certain mentality, I think, you have to do an exposure, because I've had people do exposures over and over. I'm not talking necessarily about emetophobia, but, and they never get better because they don't have the right mindset. They don't, you know, they're stepping into anxiety's territory in a very scared way. And then as they're doing the exposure, they're experiencing a high degree of anxiety, and then they just don't, it's just, they never overcome it because they're so anxious doing the exposure itself, you know?
I definitely have had people like that. And to get the right mindset, I think that's the C part of CBT. It's the cognitive part of cognitive behavioral. Exposures are behavioral, and cognitive is thinking differently about vomiting than you have thought all along. And that's not easy to do. And it might be a little bit of a long process, but I do like how you address it in the book, you know, and people can kind of go through it step by step. So, you know, that's really great. I only have one other question that I've jotted down here. Are you familiar with Abramowitz, Deakin, and Whiteside's book, Exposure Therapy for Anxiety? It's kind of they've just got a second edition out right now. You probably would be if you saw it. But
I haven't read that book. I know Abramowitz. Is it Michael?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard him speak before.
Jonathan Abramowitz. Yeah.
Yeah, I have not read that
book. I have a love-hate relationship with him and that book. And he's a researcher. I mean, he's a huge researcher. That's it, more than he is a clinician.
I think North Carolina.
But the latest edition, is he in North Carolina?
Oh, I think so.
That's cool. Someday I'm going to go there when I'm vaccinated. But in the second edition, he does talk about incorporating ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy, into the exposure. And so he has kind of a whole thing about ACT. Can you talk a little bit about how you incorporate ACT in your practice with emetophobics?
Sure. I'll give you one example. So one of the, you know, anyone with anxiety will experience physical symptoms, or most people with anxiety will experience physical symptoms. So whether that's your heart's racing fast, or you're sweating, or you're feeling nauseous, you have an upset stomach. And unfortunately, there's not much to do about that in the short run. You know, if you face a fear, you're probably going to experience those physical symptoms. And so what people need to understand is they need to learn how to accept those physical symptoms, but reject and not engage with their imagination. So you might feel some stomach discomfort, or you might feel some nausea, and then the thought might be, oh no, I'm going to throw up, or I'm not going to eat because I'm feeling bad. But so while you need to be able to accept the physical sensations that how the anxiety manifests itself within your body, you need to reject the lie in your imagination about what that physical sensation means, what you think it means. So you think it means don't eat. Well, that's not what it means. You know, when people listen to their anxiety and that tells them, oh, you're not feeling well, don't eat. If you keep that pattern up, that means you're going to go the whole day without not eating, and then you're going to start to have hunger pains and then misinterpret those hunger pains. So you have to accept those physical sensations while not engaging with how your imagination interprets those physical sensations. So that's one example of the acceptance part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like that, the metaphor that you gave before about the guy, the unwanted party guest that comes to the door. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you stand there at the doorway and try not to let him in and, you know, argue with him the whole time, you're going to miss the whole party. But instead, you just accept the fact that he shows up. He shows up and you just focus on other things. You focus on your other party guests. You focus. And then every once in a while you pass by. And you just ignore him as best as you can, but you don't miss the party because now you're focusing on other things, as opposed to only focusing on those physical symptoms and trying to make them go away.
Right. Which is not the same thing as, like, a lot of folks come away from having some ACT, and they come away with the thought that, well, emetophobia, you can never actually get over it. And you never actually get better. You just have to accept that you've got it. And it's not the same thing as what you just said. So you absolutely can get over it. I'm living proof that you can get over it. But are many, many, many people.
No, you have to accept the physical sensations that you experience. But if you accept them, over time, those physical sensations will actually diminish and go away for long periods of time. Mm-hmm. Whether that is nausea or sweating or blushing or whatever it is, you have to accept them in the moment, but the more you accept them, the more they will go away. As long as you fight with them and try to make them stop and focus on them, then they stay for a long time.
Well, Ken, it has been wonderful talking with you. I'm so glad to have you all to myself today. We're going to be meeting up again on Monday in another group, but I'm not going to be asking you questions. I'll let other people do that. But it's been delightful. Your book is fantastic. I'm just so grateful to you for writing this book. Someday I will write a book as well. David Veal's coming out with a book along with Dr. Keys. Oh gosh, I'll get it right in the notes. Which will also be a sort of self-help book when it comes out. And someday I'll write one too. But they're great. It's great to have a few because there were none. There are none right now. Yeah, so it was called Emetophobia Manual.
It was a pleasure to write. You know, it was a labor of love. And I'm just so grateful that it's helping people, and people can get better. This is a disorder that people can overcome. It's hard, but if you really devote yourself to the book and working with a therapist who knows how to treat it, you can get better. You absolutely can get better. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You just have to follow along.
Okay.
You gotta follow along.
Let's do it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Ken.
All right. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And thank you to all of my listeners and subscribers. We have now had over 10,000 podcast downloads, which is absolutely amazing. You guys are just great. There are costs associated with the podcast. If you're finding it helpful, you can buy me a coffee. Just look down to the bottom of the notes of the episode and you'll see a link right there. You can click and buy me a coffee for a couple of bucks or a couple of pounds. I will also have a link in the notes straight to Amazon to Ken's book, The Emetophobia Manual. See you all next week. Meanwhile, stay safe. Get vaccinated when you can.